Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. Welcome to the Tech Sand Rex Show. Irreverent, relevant, radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm Rex, broadcasting to you from an undisclosed location in the backwoods of Virginia.
This is Tex, broadcasting from situational difficulties. We'll talk about that later. Take it, Tex. Rex, whatever, whoever you are.
All right. Good evening, folks. As always, we are talking about RNC brokered convention. And the reason that we are discussing this, which you're not hearing in the regular corporate-controlled media, is because they've already picked their nominee. And we are addressing the real rules of the Republican Party, which call for the state committees to elect delegates and send them to the national convention, which this year is being held in Tampa at the end of August, starting on the evening of the 26th, I believe. And what happens at the convention is that the delegates convene to work on the party's platform, the rules of the party, and most importantly, to nominate the candidates to run for president and vice president. On this show,
hey,
we believe... Yeah, go ahead, Tex.
No, I was just going to apologize for that. It's these angles and bangles they're doing on these. You've been on these submarines, dude? Have you been on these things?
I've never been on a submarine, Tex.
Okay, well, you know, it's insane. Nothing is, there's no flat surfaces, man, on this thing. It's all over the place. It's driving me crazy, okay? And these idiots, you know, they think these things still have baffles. So they get behind it in that cheap Soviet crap. We have towed array sonar, dum-dum. There's no baffles anymore. Quit with that stuff. And now it's all angles and bangles because you're a bunch of idiots. Oh, God. Anyway, sorry, man. Really. Just freaking my dinner. My dinner. What are these guys doing? Anyway, go ahead.
All right. Well, calm down, and I'm sure that your dinner will be fine. And, folks, as I was saying, Tex and I are going to be talking about an RNC brokered convention. And the idea is that we want a conservative candidate. Now, why would we want a conservative candidate? Well, very simply put, I think that it's evident to everybody, especially those of you listening to this show, that after nearly, well, a little over 3.5 years of an Obama presidency, the country has not received any hope nor any good change. The only thing that's happened is an increase in magnitude of the failed policies of the past. We are in more debt than we have ever been. We have more government than we've ever had. And we have a diminishing private sector and unemployment, which, according to the numbers that came out yesterday, is hovering around 8.25%. But in truth, if you count underemployment and those that have essentially given up looking for work, that number is probably closer to 20%. A nation cannot survive if its economy is in that much of a shambles. And we have two nominees. We have the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party, which would be the incumbent president, and we have the presumptive nominee of the Republican Party, which is the guy that was asked to get out of the way last time, and now it's his turn to run. Well, the fact is that Governor Mitt Romney is not a conservative. In fact, and I think, Tex, you'd agree with me, he's really a liberal Democrat pretending to be a Republican, which is the worst possible thing you can do in an election because elections are about perception. And the perception is going to be that Mitt Romney and Barack Obama are almost identical. When you have two candidates that are very similar on all the policy issues, people are going to stick with A, the candidate that they already know, and B, the one that's more liked. And like it or not, most everybody listening to this show probably isn't a huge fan of Barack Obama, but there are people who are. Yet there are very few people, if any, who are a fan of Mitt Romney. When you have two candidates that are that close in policy and one is not liked, guess who's going to win? And if we have four more years of Barack Obama, this republic may not survive. To defeat him, you need to draw a sharp and clear contrast between your ideas and the other guy's ideas. It isn't so much this guy versus that guy as it is our vision of how things should be versus their vision of how things should be. Now, in that regard, we're going to talk about
absolutely, Rex. And I'm sorry I was on mute, so I was talking, but actually it's pretty good because silverware is moving around on me again. I may occasionally have to hang on to my my whatever this is, desk. I'm calling it a desk, so I may have to hang on to this. Anyway, silverware, again, it's clinking. Okay, but so there was this thing, right, where Obama, he said that back in 2008, right, so he's coming after Hillary Clinton, you know. So he's like, this is the direct quote, don't tell me words that don't matter. I have a dream. He said, don't tell me that words don't matter. I have a dream. Just words, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Just words. We have nothing to fear but fear itself. You know, he's doing this just words. He's like, they call that nonsense, these politicians. Okay, so then in February 2009, he says, I am pledging to cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office. So this is when this would be his, what do they call that, the State of the Union, where he goes up and he bores Washington, D.C. half to death for several hours. So he went up and he said that I am pledging to cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office. Just words. So the deficit in January of 2009, which he inherited, was $800 billion. And so he was going to cut that in half. And in the schooling that I got, you know, which that was that old schooling that I got, you know, that's where you divide that number by two, and so you come up with $400 billion. But the deficit right now is $1.26 trillion. So he actually increased the deficit by half. So I think he's using that new math. And so the only part of that wasn't true really was the word cut. So, you know, you could just remove that word and say, today I am pledging to the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office, and that would be accurate. So I think this guy accidentally the entire economy.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. The simple fact is that if we hold Barack Hussein Obama to his own words, he should not be running. He should actually graciously step down and say, all the stuff I promised you 4 years ago, I didn't deliver on any of it, and I told you back then that if I couldn't deliver on these things, I'd be a one-term president. Now, clearly he seems to actually want to be running again, since I think he spent more than half the time in office either playing golf or campaigning for the next election instead of doing his job, which is okay with me because the job he's doing is so bad that I wish he did less of it. But the fact that he's running means that we have to make him a one-term president. And if the Republican Party runs Mitt Romney, Barack Obama is not going to be a one-term president. He's going to win pretty handily, I would say. I mean, most of the polls are showing that Romney trails Obama. Now, how do you trail a guy who has broken every promise that he's made to his constituency, who has presided over a devastating economy, who told us that he was going to end the wars and he's increased the wars, who told us he was going to cut the debt and he's increased the debt and the deficit, who told us that he was going to close Gitmo and he didn't close Gitmo. I mean, not that I agree with that, but the fact is that the guy just hasn't come through on any of his promises except for one, right?
So it's Club Med, man. Don't close Club Med. That place is awesome.
He said that he was going to socialize health care. In fact, in the early parts of the campaign, and the videos are out there, he basically said that he was going to usher in a policy that would be one step towards a single-payer system. Well, that's the only thing he's accomplished. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, Rex.
Now, I don't know anybody who thinks that that's a good idea. If you're a single-payer socialist, you don't think it's a good idea because it doesn't go far enough, but maybe you'll be happy to swallow him because it's a step in the direction that you want. If you're anybody else, you know that this is an absolute disaster because if the government controls your health care, they control everything.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you, all right. So I'm going to set my dinner aside for a second because we're doing this thing again. Freaking need tape. I got to take my plates now. You know, now I got, what am I going to take my food? Well, I got to live to that, but still, it's killing me. All right. Look, here's the deal. Okay, back in the day, the Wall Street houses, the House of Morgan, and, you know, Lehman Brothers and all those dudes rolling around, they were limited, they were partnerships, okay? And so what a partnership has is joint and several liability, okay? What that means is becoming a partner was like an actually really big deal because what that meant was all the other partners were on the hook for the decisions that you made. And if you made a bad one, they all lost their boats, their houses, and their everything, right? So they talked about and considered and careful, were cautious about what they would and would not invest in because they could literally lose their shirts, okay? Then they decided, well, you know, that kind of stinks. Like, I don't like that. I don't like the fact that I could lose. That sounds like a risk. And you know what everybody's trying to do, right, Rex?
You're trying to avoid risk.
You got to avoid that risk. You don't want that risk. The risk is terrible. You want the sure thing. Always go with the sure thing. If you can get a sure thing, let me tell you, that's a good deal. All right? So they said, hey, let's not do this, and let's become companies. And then if we all do a bunch of stupid stuff and hire a bunch of, you know, knuckleheads, then we don't lose anything. And we just, oh, that company's gone. I'll go work for another company where we can go do the same stupid stuff and not actually learn anything, but laugh about it at the bar. Okay, that's fine. And then we had your friends over there at Jekyll Island, the banks who were like, hey, what if we're stupid? What happens when we're stupid? Then, like, the bank goes away, you know, and that's like a lot of money we could lose, and then I could lose my shirts, and then I don't have, like, a boat. And, that sounds like a risk. I don't want a risk. So we gotta get rid of this risk. How do we get rid of the risk? Oh, we'll create this thing called the Federal Reserve. Okay. If we go broke, the Federal Reserve bails us out. Well, how do they do that? Well, they just print up the money, right? And so essentially, they just take it out of everybody's pocket. You guys rolling around all day. You don't know. That bank apparently hired a bunch of knuckleheads to make some stupid decisions, or, you know, somebody wasn't reading their TPS cover sheets and they stamped approved on one that was supposed to be void, and, you know, whatever. It was all sixes and nines over there. So, you know, this bank's going down, but no worries. The Fed steps in, you know, you're back up on your feet. Just remember, you know, work on those TPS cover sheets and everything's going to be okay. What's going on with this Obamacare? And the reason all these doctors are into it, because the doctors love this thing. You know why? Doctors are getting killed on insurance, right? They go do a procedure, there's a problem, they get sued. And so this Obamacare thing, guess what it does? It's the Federal Reserve for doctors for insurance claims. That's what it is. So they're trying to put their risk back on you. What's the deal with the risk? Everything's a risk. Okay, how much risk is there in getting into a ship, the rickety piece of crap ship in Europe, with maybe or maybe not enough food to get across, and maybe you do or don't even know where you're going, and you just get on the thing and you buy a ticket, and then they drop you off in the woods, and there's like bears out there and dudes shooting you with arrows, and you've got like an axe and, you know, maybe a slice of beef jerky, and if you're lucky, you got a beer, but you probably don't even have that, and, you know, go make your house, knucklehead. You know, welcome to the real world. When everybody start getting afraid of risk around here?
Well, I mean, the fact is that I think that you hit on a very valid point, and that is that life is full of uncertainty and change, and we have a natural and innate survival instinct to avoid these risks. But the fact is that if there is no risk, then there is no reward. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. But if you are one of these so-called masters of the universe, then what you're trying to do is control everything because of the fear that you have built up in you, and you're afraid of things not going exactly as you planned. So that when you mentioned the cartel on Jekyll Island, I believe you were referring to November 22nd, 1910, when the interest that represented 25 to 50% of the world's wealth at the time met in secret to draft a banking bill. Now, why did they meet in secret? They met in secret because if the American people knew that they were drafting a banking bill drafted by the bankers themselves, which essentially cartelizes their industry, then the American people would have never stood for it. So they met in secret, and initially they were going to come up with some name for this thing, and it was Warburg, who at the time was not even an American citizen. He was a German national working, I believe, for the Rothschild interest in Germany.
I got no pen.
Who came?
I got no pen.
He came up with the name. He called it the Federal Reserve System. Now, when we hear that word, most of us think, oh, it's federal, therefore it's part of the federal government. Well, the Federal Reserve System is not federal. It is a private corporation. It is a private banking cartel, essentially, and it doesn't have any reserves. And it's not a system, it's a scheme. So we have the Federal Reserve System. That's a name in what George Orwell called newspeak, okay? It is using words that mean the opposite to condition you to think otherwise. So most people think, oh, the Federal Reserve System is a pretty good thing. It keeps our money supply under control. And the very simple fact is what it does is it keeps it under control for their benefit, not for ours. And I think what you're talking about here, and I think you touched on a very important topic, is that the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act is similar to the Federal Reserve Act in the sense that it's legally, by force of law and the power of government, enforcing a cartelization of an industry, which is the antithesis of a free market. And as Americans
exactly.
who live in this republic, we are free marketers, meaning that we want self-determination, that you pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Whatever class you happen to be in at this moment, you could rise out of it through your own efforts and move on.
Not
to,
in the future, though, the way these guys are going.
Well, the way these guys are going is that they're trying to limit us to their control to operate for their benefit. And I think that the important – and the reason we're talking about this is because this is exactly what's happening with the managed perception of the electoral process to get the nominee who will be running against Barack Obama. And let's see. We have a caller here from 513 that I'm going to bring in and see if they want to chime in on this topic
hold on,
or ask a
question. Before you get to 513, I got to say something here, all right? So, look, here's the deal with this – with this Wall Street thing, right? You know, with the getting rid of the partnerships and all of that, whatever, you know, because nobody wants any risk, okay? So there's three rules of finance. If you guys don't know, you know, you can read the complicated ones with all the extra words that sound real flowery and everything that comes down to this. You already know these, but, you know, they write them down and, you know, because some people are a little slow, okay? So more money is better than less money. So if somebody's going to offer you $10 or $5, you want to go with that 10, right? Okay, so that's real easy. Okay. The next thing is money today is better than money tomorrow, right? So if they say, well, I'll give you $10 today or I give you $10 tomorrow, you get that $10 today as best you can, right? Okay. Then the next thing they say is cash for sure is better than cash maybe. Like, I'm definitely totally going to hand you this right now, or it could be under this lid here. I don't know. Which one do you want? Just totally hand it to me, man. You know, I don't want what's with the mystery box, you know. Going, okay? Well, there's supposed to be a fourth rule of finance, all right, that everybody seems to have forgotten, which is the greater the risk, the higher the return. The lower the risk, the less the return, right? But you know what they did here, Rex, on this thing recently? They've done studies, and it turns out it's actually not true. The less risk, the higher the return. Yeah, because you put a TPS cover sheet on everything. That's why, because you got a Fed, and there's no partnerships anymore. Everybody's a and corporation, everything. So you got to go with the safe bets because the guys taking the risk are knuckleheads. That's why.
And so the analogy you're drawing, and if I'm correct, Dex, you let me know. The analogy you're drawing is that these rhinos that are running the RNC, like Rince Priebus and John Boehner and all these other guys, they want to take no risk. They don't want controversy, and they want a predictable outcome. So they don't want some wacky, zany candidate like, say, Speaker Newt Gingrich or some off-the-wall guy who read the Constitution and actually believes in it like Ron Paul. They want some humdrum, banal, lame, Brooks Brothers wearing the suit wearing with the nice hair Mitt Romney character. So it's kind of the same thing. You're saying they're avoiding the risk and the controversy by selecting a guy who's just very tepid.
Yeah, not only do they not want risk, they don't even want to have to think, much less actually do something. They all want tans. They want tans, and they want golf courses, and they want it today, they want it now, and they want it for sure, and they want it with no risk. Okay, well,
and they don't care what it costs the rest of us.
You know what you get on something with no risk? No return.
Right.
Or
a blatant lie. All right, 513, you're on the line.
I'm walls because I could punch through one right now. Anyway,
513, are you there?
Yes, I am here. Hey, Tex, hey, Rex, how are you guys doing tonight?
All right. It's Robert Jetter. Robert Jetter is the host of Bard's Logic Political Talk, 8 to 10 p.m., Sunday through Thursday. And how are you doing, Robert?
I'm doing really well. Thank you, guys. How are you?
Okay. What's on your mind? Anything that we were just rambling about is resonating with you?
Oh yeah, definitely. And it's interesting where you say the less the risk, the less reward is with Romney, since there isn't any risk with him. There's going to be, and I think Tex touched on this, is there's not going to be any reward because he's not going to win. So you're not going to get the reward of a victory because you didn't take any risk in a candidate, much like who you said, Rex, of Newt Gingrich or Ron Paul. Now those, at least where the Ronos are concerned, would be considered risky candidates. But there's no risk in Mitt Romney, and in my opinion, this is why. Because, as we, you know, if you've heard many times before, and I know I've said many times before, is that the reason there's no risk in Mitt Romney is because not only for what you guys pointed out, but also is, if you just look at history, I mean, there's not going to be any reward because they don't win. Moderate Republicans do not win in the general election, nor do Republican GOP candidates who become the nominee, who aren't the incumbent, but they become the nominee for the Republican Party on the first ballot. They lose at the convention. They lose in the general election. So once again, there's no reward. So do something different. And that something different was, instead of propping up a moderate such as Romney, the same way they did in 2008 with McCain, and then they also do it with Bob Dole, you know, and I would even say back in 76 that they did with Gerald Ford,
mm-hmm.
is that they were all lost, and for the same reasons that I just said earlier. Well, you know, and that's a definition of insanity. You keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. And
well, I
so
agree with you,
don't
Robert.
Take...
I agree with you about that definition of insanity, but let me just interject this. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result unless you're getting the result that you want. And when you said that there's no reward because they're not running a risky candidate, so there's no reward because he'll lose, I think from our perspective that's true because we want to win. We want to replace Obama. We want to defeat him. We want him out. And we want a real conservative candidate in to get us back towards the republic that is under the Constitution and operating, you know, on a federal system with free markets. The fact is that I don't think that these guys want that, much like the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act we were talking about and much like the Federal Reserve Act we were talking about. These guys aren't interested in necessarily winning the White House. What they're interested in is keeping the power. So I suspect that they are getting the payoff that they want with these moderate losers because what they're doing is they're going to get the – so-called base of the party behind them because we want to defeat the other guy, and then we lose, and they go on behaving the same way that they do, but they haven't, quote, lost us because, hey, we tried. And I think that that's their reward, and that's why they're not taking a risk with a Newt Gingrich or a Ron Paul. And Tex, let me ask you this. Would you agree with that assessment in the sense that if you actually nominated a Newt Gingrich and a Ron Paul and then they went on to win, that all these guys with their cushy positions now – might actually be out of a job?
Yeah, exactly. That's what they're worried about. They're like, whoa, that guy is all about accountability. I suck. We can't have accountability. Get rid of that dude. He's going to check my TPS cover sheet. I don't fill those things out. I don't know what's going on with them. You know? Uh-oh. Get rid of that guy. You know, that's exactly what they're worried about. They're terrible.
Well, it just boggles the mind that these guys are more interested in their positions and their, quote, prestige and their ability to hobnob with the lobbyists and get their benefits, and we lose, you know?
Yeah, let me tell you something. I was up there in Dump City for a while, right? So up there in Dump City, they get elected to this stuff, and they think it's about them. They're like, oh, wow, check it out. You know, people treat me with, like, respect and everything. And, oh, this guy's rolling out the red carpet when I go overseas. This guy's... you know, hit me up with some smoked salmon and caviar and my kiss in my butt. Yeah, it's because I'm so freaking awesome. No, it's not because you're awesome, idiot. It's because the United States is awesome. And you know who the United States is? That's us. It's not about you. You're a knucklehead. You're a politician. Like, seriously, if you're a politician, you have a psychological disorder. Thank God for you, but, you know, everybody's got their role to play. But seriously, politicians. Anyway. Like these guys.
Well,
if you were good at something, if you were actually good at it, you would be doing it. What?
Yeah.
You're running for office.
They're terrible at it, so they just pretend. It's like those who don't know how to do teach. So apparently those who can't do anything run for office. Tex and Robert.
Unless you got a guy who's actually done it before, got it done, proved it to them, put it in their face that they're so terrified of. They're like, we can't have that guy. Like, he knows what he's doing. You know, they're over there at an amusement park of caviar and all this and fancy parties and suntans and golfing. And then Newt one day just looks up and he does the same thing I did in my living room. Just stood up and said, this is BS. I'm not putting up with this crap. I know how to fix it.
Tex, so what you're saying basically is that Newt's biggest liability is that he was a politician, that he was in office, the third highest office, by the way, in line for the presidency, that he made effective changes, that he reduced these things and cut the spending. And so these guys have the proven record that this guy did these things, which is a political liability because they don't want, that's exactly the opposite of what they want, so they're fearful of him. And there's somebody else that's like Newt Gingrich that I know of. Okay, let me tell you about this. There's a guy that I know, and you know him very well, and so does Robert, who tirelessly fights for Newt Gingrich. He's got a proven track record of doing it and actually inspiring other people to do it. And I think we got him on the line. Sammy, are you there?
I am here.
Rex, hey, welcome. Sammy. Hey, yeah, Sammy. Good to hear you.
Hey, Robert. Hey, Tex. And hey, Rex. I had a comment from somebody, and I'll leave the name unknown, that I am pissing off some Newt supporters because we have changed the format of my show. And where have I changed the format of my show? And the format of my show has been the same, has constantly be what we're doing. And we're doing nothing but fighting for Newt Gingrich. And when people want to attack us for what we're doing, and I told this one person, I said, the people that are complaining, they're most likely Romney supporters.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, sorry about us, Romney. Sorry about us, Acorn. Yeah, I guess your party didn't work out.
I mean, I've allowed a few words on my show lately that we normally don't use, and maybe we need to back off that. But that is, we're on Blog Talk Radio, and right now we are fighting for our life right now. We are fighting for our freedom. You don't hear the F-bomb or the GD-bomb on my show. You might hear another one or two other words, which sometimes I overlook if I know they're a direct Newt supporter. And for that, I love you for what you're doing. And, I mean, people are running scared now. Why are they caving in to the Mitt Romney trolls?
Yeah, look, I know what they say. Oh, this guy, he's over here, he's all inappropriate, this dude. You know, what's he saying, this guy? You know, using hells and whatever. I'm on my show, okay? So I say shit if I want to, you know? You got the Disney Channel. You don't want to hear me. You got the Disney Channel. Go watch that thing, you know? Okay, so, yeah, I'm inappropriate. I'm down here in Texas, for God's sake, all right? This is how we talk, you know? So I'm trying to get a little East Coast. You know, I try not to frighten the natives when I'm up there because I know you guys can't handle it, you know, because you get that pacifier in your mouth all the freaking time. You know, it's really annoying. But, you know, I just try to pretend I'm one of you, you know, put the sheets clothing on or whatever it is. You know, I don't know. Don't bother me. Don't dial into this show. You don't have to. Go away.
Well,
you know,
exactly.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and don't get me wrong. This one person that alerted me to this, that these people were complaining, is an awesome Newt supporter.
Okay, well, and I'm offensive, I am inflammatory, so, you know, I'm sorry to them if I've offended them or made them feel in any way that this is not a cause
they support. No, they can get offended because right now we got 26 days till the convention?
22?
Yeah, I think we're down to 22. 22. Actually, that's tomorrow, 21 days.
Yeah, and we have to be fighting for our country. And if somebody slips off with a bad word, oh well, as long as they're not attacking Newt Gingrich, I will overlook that.
I allowed the country to fail, but I was very polite about it.
Yeah.
There's no points for style, knucklehead.
Look, here's a fundamental problem, and I think this is something we've been talking about a lot because it ties right into exactly why we got a presumptive nominee that nobody likes, okay? It's private property. That's what counts. And the fact is that if you pay for the mic, which we paid for this mic, and you're not regulated by the FCC, then it's your mic, say whatever you want. Someone can change a channel. Now, when we're a guest somewhere else, you know, you follow the house rules, whichever, you know, the owner of that private property set in place. Now, there's a couple of things that I won't tolerate. I won't tolerate blasphemy. But if someone gets excited at this point, 3 weeks before the convention, and something inappropriate may come out of their mouth or mine, first of all, I warned you at the beginning of the show. I said that we were irreverent, okay? And the fact is we're radioactive, and it's conservatism with a bite. 21 days in politics can be an eternity, but it'll move pretty quickly. And what we're talking about here is not winning the Super Bowl or getting a gold medal at the Olympics. We are talking about whether we're going to have leadership that is actually going to restrain federal Leviathan and give power back to the states and to the people and save the republic, or we're talking about 4 more years of a corporatist Keynesian who employs Marxist rhetoric and anti-colonialist views, who's sitting in the White House using extra-constitutional powers, okay? And if he's given a reign where he doesn't have to worry about what he says next because of re-election, this guy could potentially destroy the country. So if I get a little friggin' pissed off with people who tell me, oh, we got to get behind Romney because we don't want to defeat Obama, I want to knock him upside the head and tell him, listen, you stupid shit, Mitt Romney can't beat Obama, so if you're on board with Obama, fine, let me step on you and kick you out of my way. But if you're not on board with Obama, then you'd better get on the Newt Gingrich train. Otherwise, this country's going to hell.
It's like that shake on airplane. You just line up, you know, just smack them back in there. Hey, you hit him with the smelling salts. What's going on over there?
They got some good Kool-Aid, I guess. I mean, yeah. I wish I could find some kind of Kool-Aid.
It's very potent Kool-Aid. And what I mean by it's very potent Kool-Aid, what the Republican electorate is being spoon-fed, is that they are getting their information on Romney, on saying he's actually a conservative, he's actually going to do things that can win, he's the only candidate that could have beaten Obama. It's a potent poison. Well, it is. Because the information that the folks are getting it from, the conservative Republican, not the, well, the conservatives too, but the Republican electorate are getting from, they're getting it from, unfortunately, news stations and talk radio hosts that they have trusted for years. And those folks, like Fox News, Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, they turned their back and, in my mind, betrayed the conservatives of the Republican Party. And by betraying the conservatives of the Republican Party, they have betrayed the whole of the Republican Party. And in this instance, in my opinion, because it's such an important election, betrayed the American people themselves.
Yeah. Well, you know why? Because those dudes, they don't want any risk. That's the deal. Can you guys still hear me, by the way? Can you still hear me good?
I hear you.
I can hear you.
Okay, good, because we just did like a dive. I can't even eat on this thing. I just get the food away. I guess I'm not going to eat, you know. But so
did your ears pop with that dive?
Pop? That was pop off. This things are incredible. What? You know, why do I got to go through all this? I don't know. Anyway, half a league onward. Whatever, you know, we got to do here. But, you know, so we're getting away from the coast, I guess, after the deep stuff. Anyway, but same thing with this Rush Limbaugh and this Sean Hannity. Oh, I want the sure thing. I don't want the risk. Oh, so, you know, I'm just going to, you know, someone came to me, you know, now I'm owned by Bain Capital, and they hit me with the TTS cover sheet. Now I got to fill this thing out. I notice when I get closer to the wall, to the water now, you get an echo. I don't know why that is, but whatever. Maybe it's just the metal in there is bouncing. Anyway, but yeah, that's the thing. The deal is, you said you stood for certain principles. That's why people tuned you in. And then what you said is, but I have a new principle. It's the almighty dollar, okay? So people tuned you out. And now you're like, hey, what's going on? What's going on over here? You know, I thought I had an audience. You people do whatever I say. No, doesn't work that way.
And, I mean, the one thing about it, either you're a Newt supporter or you're not a Newt supporter. And I think we might be pissing some people off that when we say that we would support Ron Paul if we have to. But but that's not the main thing about your show, and it's not the main thing about my show. We are supporting Newt Gingrich 100%.
Absolutely, Sammy. I mean, look, I made it very clear when we put the show out there. This show is to get a brokered convention and nominate Newt Gingrich. I also tell people this is a Paul-friendly show. So you Campaign for Liberty, Ron Paul people out there, feel free to call in, chime in. We like you all. The fact is that Ron Paul, okay, has been a Republican a lot longer than Mitt Romney, who was a liberal Democrat. Ron Paul is a libertarian, a conservative libertarian. There are liberal libertarians, but Ron Paul is a conservative libertarian, which belongs in the big tent that is the Republican Party. And Newt Gingrich is an authentic conservative in the Reagan mold. In fact, Newt Gingrich was one of the few young Republicans in the House who was fighting for Reagan's revolution. And I know when he started running, all the old dead, they pulled out all these Republicans out of their crypts and said, "Hey, you got to come here and tell people that Newt Gingrich didn't like Ronald Reagan." Well, he did, because he would spend hours every night, okay, when C-SPAN was just starting out, and C-SPAN had an agreement that if someone was talking on the floor in the House, C-SPAN would be broadcasting, and so Newt would sit there and he'd give these long speeches about what was going on with the Reagan Revolution, and he started the Conservative Opportunity Society. So he was there from the beginning, and in fact, Nancy Reagan said that Barry Goldwater passed the torch to Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan passed it to Newt Gingrich. So these are not exactly in agreement as far as ideologies go, but very, very similar, and certainly much more in common when you compare them to the corporatist, Keynesian, liberal, Marxist on the other side. So we have a commonality here, and the fact is it going to be Ron Paul or is it going to be Newt Gingrich? I don't know. I want Newt Gingrich because I'm a conservative. I'd accept Ron Paul. I will not accept Mitt Romney. But the fact is that we're not getting that opportunity because these guys are trying to ramrod this Mitt Romney character down our throats, and our delegates are empowered to go to Tampa and make a decision and decide between the three options. Do we want to go with a tepid Mitt Romney liberal Democrat? Do we want to go with a conservative who was the Speaker of the House under what was verifiably the most conservative moment following through the Reagan Revolution, late 90s? Or do we want a libertarian who's very pro-Constitution and anti-Federal Reserve? Those are the choices. Well, that's why we empowered our delegates. But we're not getting that choice. They're trying to manage this thing in advance in order to have a four-day campaign commercial for Mitt Romney to try to convince the rest of us to support him. How is that even going to be possible?
Well, one thing, Rex, let me tell you something, because all these people, they start this cloak and dagger stuff, right, where they got the whisper campaigns because they can't, they can't face the opponent. So, I'll undermine them with a bunch of BS, right? Well, whatever. Money talks, bullshit walks, dumbass. Anyway, so they start with, I think he's like a Paul supporter. I think he's, Ron Paul's terrible. Look, the deal is, you guys start off with this stupid narrative that I can't freaking stand about how Ron Paul is somehow some third-party candidate, when one of the first political rallies I went to as an infant happened to be, down in Texas, because I was living in Houston back then, and then I moved elsewhere, and then I moved back, right? But I was living down there. My parents took me to a Ron Paul thing, right? Because he was running for Congress down there. He's a congressman, okay? So this idea that he's freaking third party is driving me crazy, because what you're doing, Romney supporters, is you're covering over the fact that your guy's the third party guy, and that's your Achilles heel, right? That's your Achilles heel. So you're trying to accuse your enemy of your own worst crime. You're a Democrat. You're running a liberal Democrat who voted for Paul Tsongas, switched parties because he couldn't beat Ted Kennedy, because Ted Kennedy knew he was in trouble in 1994 because of the contract with America, and so the Democrats had to find some Democrat who could run on our ticket who would obliterate all the friendly, Republicans, all the actual Republicans, in order to get the nomination to be the Republican nominee so that he could lose for Ted Kennedy. That's literally exactly what happened, okay? And that's why he was like, I don't want to go back to Reagan Bush. I'm not for Reagan Bush. I don't think we should sign a contract, because he's got that face-off application. That face-off is incredible stuff, man. It's very powerful. The guys who programmed that, very, very good, right? What we wanted to do when we were building that's an earlier Romney version that we built, okay? What we wanted to do was put that GAF 2.0 that the Biden bot's running, because that's a powerful app too, that GAF 2.0. It's really actually deadly because Biden, he, out of the gate, 2008, day one, first press conference, he shot himself in the foot, and then he started laughing. He looked him right in the eye and he said, yeah, check it out. I can do it to the other one too. Boom. Blew himself in the foot, this guy. He's incredible. So what you want to do, like a perfect application would be, let's marry up that GAF 2.0 with the face off, but you can't because you've got to put a 5 head on it, and it looks weird. So that model doesn't exist.
I mean, and Dan and Rex, Tex and Rex and Robert, we have so much invested in Newt Gingrich not to give up what we're doing for Newt Gingrich. I mean, I have given my last days to Newt Gingrich. And y'all are giving everything y'all have. Robert is giving everything he has for Newt Gingrich. And when people try to tell us that we need to shut up for Newt Gingrich, that's where they completely lose me. Plain and simple. I am not going back down. I'm not going to shut up.
Exactly, and, Sammy.
Yeah.
You know, we have too much invested in the freedom of our country. And that person is Mr. Speaker Newt Gingrich.
Right on, Sammy. You're absolutely right. So here's my take on this. And folks, what I want to let you know is the discussion that we're having here is supposed to give you the information, and if you have questions, please call in. We're happy to talk to you. We are giving you the information as to how the rules work, how the process works, the fact that it is the convention that nominates the candidate, not the convention that rubber stamps the candidate, but the convention nominates the candidate to run against the opposition, which is presumably Barack Obama. And what has to happen right now, we're not talking about who's going to vote this way and who's going to vote that way. I mean, I got people coming up to me saying, you're not supporting Romney, you're voting for Obama. Well, you know, no one gets to vote for the president until November 6th. Okay? The only people that have a vote now, because the primaries are over, are the delegates. There's about 2,400 of them, and I think another 2,300 alternates or something like that, who will be convening in Tampa to elect the nominee. Their votes are the ones that count. We voted for them. Now they're going to represent us, and they're going to go vote for the candidate. Those are the people that we have to reach, okay? And you can reach them multiple ways. You can tweet them. You can reach them on Facebook. You can call them. You can write them a letter, okay? Contact your either your Board of Elections or your state GOP office, depending on which state you're in. The rules are a little bit different, but contact both if you're not sure. Get that list of delegates and write them and say, listen, I'm really worried about this country. I don't want Barack Obama to be president. I don't want him to win re-election. And I think that Romney is far too much of a liability to defeat him. He's a dangerous candidate, and he's handing everything over to the Democrats that they want. Remember something. The Democrats want to run against Mitt Romney because he's easy to beat. So you want to let these delegates know that there are millions of us out here, and by all accounts, it's at least 70% of Republican voters who don't want to vote for Mitt Romney. So get us another candidate. That's what the rules say. The rules dictate that the convention can nominate anybody. It doesn't even have to be somebody who won a primary. The fact is that when the state delegations, as long as five of them and a majority of the delegates in those state delegations choose a nominee, as long as five state delegations out of all of the delegations there put forward a name, then that person is on the ballot. And then the entire convention votes. And the first candidate who gets, I'm not sure if it's 1144 or 1191, but whatever that number is.
1144. That's what I was trying to tell that dude last night on Sandy's show, where apparently I was inappropriate. But I appropriately kicked that dude into a Spartan pit. So all I can say is nothing wins like victory, or nothing succeeds like success, and nothing fails like failure. So I won, but I was inappropriate doing it. But did you check out that guy's style? Much better style than me. He could fall into a pit like nobody I've ever seen this dude, like a swan.
And we are not going to shut up, and we're not going back down. I'm going to have to leave the show for a few minutes because I got dinner cooking. I got to go in there and stir my spaghetti sauce and It's been simmering now for about an hour.
Oh, sounds good.
Yeah, you're making me hungry, Sammy.
Yeah, I cut up some fresh garlic and fresh onion and put it in sauce, and it's going to be awesome. And
maybe I should switch to, like, sauce-based foods, because on these submarines, trying to anything with, like, steak and knife don't work. I got to go to sauce-based foods, or, like, astronaut food or something.
Hey, I'll be back on the show in a few minutes, okay?
All right, Sammy, you go throw that sauce. Thanks.
God bless you all.
Bye-bye. God bless you, Sammy. Robert, you want to chime in on what we were just chatting about?
Sure, Rex. Actually, I'm on the other phone. I'll be right with you, okay?
Oh,
but
okay.
I would like
take
to, yes, definitely.
No problem.
Thank
take
you.
Your time. Tex, I agree with you 100%. I mean, the fact is that what people are failing to understand is that once the delegates vote and once the nominees are put into submission on the ballot and then the delegates vote, the first one that gets 1144 wins. Now, what are the odds that Mitt Romney is going to win on that first ballot when he only has about 420 delegates that actually want to vote for him?
I told you this earlier today, right? So I was rolling around town, and I had the radio on, and the guy on the radio, he said that at the moment that Romney's situation is so dire with delegates that the campaign's already realized they can't do it. They're like, uh-oh, what are we going to do, right? So we got a lot of money in this thing. So what they're talking about over there at the Romney camp is that they want to do a Reagan-Bush thing, right? Because remember, Reagan defeated Bush. Bush mm-hmm. was the Romney of 1980. So Reagan defeated him, so they said, all right, so what we're going to do is get in touch with the modern-day Reagan, which is Newt Gingrich, and we're going to offer to put ourselves on the bottom of that ticket, right? So, you know, but they got to get their script together because, you know, that Florida thing, little inappropriate, so they got to, you know, come contrite and all this kind of stuff and, you know, hey, we're kind of totally sorry about that. It turns out you were really awesome. You know, it's a good fight, good battle, all that kind of stuff. So anyway, they got to get their script together. But Gingrich is at this point is waiting for a call from Romney so that Romney can ask to be his VP pick. Because when you get to a brokered convention, chances are, you know, the Newtzilla is going to do incredibly well in that brokered convention, right? And when this thing speaks, when this Newtzilla, when he releases it, blast and flames, you know, but he's shooting blue flames, this guy. He's shooting, those are blue flames coming out, right? And so even though the convention can pick the ticket with Newt's oratorical skills, you know, he can probably pick his own nominee. So now everyone's coming to him saying, you know, Newt, pick me. So, mm-hmm. you know, he's expecting the Romney call, you know, basically any day now. I don't know. They got to, over there at the Romney camp, they're filling out the TPS cover sheets and all that kind of stuff, trying to get everything in line.
You know, speaking of that, we heard for a while, and I find it interesting that that talk has quieted down a little bit, and that was, oh, my gosh, who's Newt? I mean, to me, I'm so plugged in with Newt being the nominee. It's, you know, oh, my gosh, Romney's, who's his VP pick going to be? Who's his VP? That's kind of quieted down, you know, some notches. But since we're on that subject, I say they were talking about the Romney shortlist. I would say, if we may, just for a few minutes, I actually have to go in about 12 minutes, but what about a short list of VP picks for Newt? I would think someone like Sarah Palin or something like that might be on a short list.
He's already got a short list. Believe me, he's already got a short list. Romney's afraid it's a little too short right now.
Yeah, he wants one name longer.
Yeah, that's right. Romney, those TPS cover sheets, let me tell you, they're complicated. A lot of fine print in those, you know.
Yeah.
So you get your jeweler's loop out, and you get your guys on that one, try to figure out how you're going to fix this.
Well, because here's the thing with that is, if Romney was to be the nominee after the gavel dropped, okay, just playing out that scenario, Newt would do phenomenal things for Romney on that ticket. However, on the reverse, with Newt Gingrich on the top of the ticket, Romney would do nothing for the ticket in that position.
Yeah, I agree. And I actually want to touch.
Well, he would be along for the ride. That's the only thing he would do. He would eat a lot of, like, you know, he would drink a lot of the cognac that they have and the champagne. But that's about it. He'd run up big bills.
Tex, you brought up a very good point, and actually I want to kind of touch base on it, and then you guys can chime in. But you brought up a very good point, which I think people forget. First of all, in recent history, everything in the Republican Party is always measured against Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan's like become the patron saint of the Republican Party, you know, Mr. Conservative. That's what who everybody wants to quote and who everybody wants to be like. But back in 1980, that wasn't the case. He was despised by the Republican Party, and as you pointed out, they wanted George H.W. Bush. And in fact, at that time, the Republicans were not very free market. There weren't too many libertarian-minded or even Austrian economist-leaning people in the party. It was quite a statist mess, okay, coming off the heels of Richard Nixon and the colossal failure of Gerald Ford and the terrible years that were managed into decay by Jimmy Carter. And so they wanted to kind of get back to that no risk, no reward security zone that they were in before, and they picked the party guy, George H.W. Bush, who even referred to Reagan's plan of lowering taxes and cutting spending to stimulate the economy. He referred to it as voodoo economics. Okay, and they didn't treat him well.
So
George H.W. Bush and Ronald Reagan were not friends. They didn't get along. So, Tex, how did George H.W. Bush, who really hated Reagan, and Reagan certainly wasn't ideologically sympathetic to George H.W. Bush, the establishment rhino of 1980, how did it end up that guy was the vice president for Ronald Reagan?
Well, and that vice presidency choice, I mean, you and I have already talked about, that fooled us in 88, and that's what screwed us with that 1990 thing, when, you know, the new Zilla first emerged there in 1990, and like John Sununu was like, what the heck, I just got like a blast of blue flame to my face. I mean, what's going on over here? Well, what happened was back then the Republican Party was in really bad shape, and Richard Nixon resigned, literally, the word on the street was the Republican Party is gone for good, and that was the end of it. And so Reagan could not afford for there not to be a loyal opposition, which is what I feel will happen to us if we pick Romney. So Reagan said, I can't afford for there not to be a loyal opposition, so I will pick George Bush in order to ensure the continued survival of the party. And that's how he got on there. And then, you know, he's like, but I'll keep him in the back real quiet, you know. Like that, you know, open can of baking soda in the back of the fridge. Dennis Miller, shut
keep
up.
Keep it from stinking.
Hilarious. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Well, but the other interesting thing, and this actually, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, why are you guys talking about this history? Well, I think it's important because the news media and our current apathy and lack of involvement has got us all way off base. So looking at these historical facts kind of helps us remember, oh, this is how things work so that we can anticipate what is likely to happen at the upcoming convention. Didn't they also try to float a Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan co-presidency? Following up on the fact that in the 76 convention, because remember, everybody, Gerald Ford did not run for office. Gerald Ford succeeded to the presidency because Richard Nixon resigned. And so then in 76, he was obviously the incumbent for all intents and purposes, so he was going to run. And it was several ballots, right? It was almost, I mean, the convention almost went for Reagan, right, Tex?
Yeah. Well, you know, a Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan co-presidency. How desperate was those Ford guys? I mean, and they're coming up with new stuff. They're going back to the Roman Constitution. Hey, we'll have a dual consulate. Oh, really? We will. Oh, let's renegotiate that. Hey, idiot, that's not in the cards. Go home.
Well, Ford only won by 32 or 33 delegates in that convention.
Yep, and the brilliant thing, Robert, you're absolutely right. It was very close, okay? It was like Waterloo, you know, damn near run thing. But then Ford beckoned Reagan, because, you know, the crowd obviously liked Reagan. I mean, he was definitely creating an excitement. So he beckoned Reagan to come down and give a speech at the convention. It wasn't scheduled, it was impromptu. He said, you know, come on down. And then Reagan was like, I wasn't planning on speaking. I didn't prepare anything. So, you know, I don't have a teleprompter. I don't know what to say. So he went down there and he just gave this speech. And it was a stirring, moving speech. And the reason for that is if you are truly a conservative, you breathe it and you live it, like Newt Gingrich and Ronald Reagan, you can talk about it off the cuff. If you're orchestrated like Mitt Romney, then you need a script and a teleprompter. So Reagan got down there right off the cuff. He gave this great speech, and the convention delegates all looked at each other like, oh, shit, we picked the wrong guy.
Mm-hmm.
And what did Ford go on to do?
Yeah.
Spectacular loss against Jimmy Carter. I mean, come on, Jimmy Carter.
Exactly.
Well, that's what Biden was saying when the teleprompter fell over. He's like, oh, no, I broke Barack Obama's teleprompter. Whatever will he do? Because what you got to realize, Rex, you got to love that light blue. That light blue team's really good. Those guys are doing good work over there. You got to give them a hand. You know, they're working with what they got, but they're good too.
So how does this relate, Tex, Robert? How does this relate to the coming convention? So we've got this presumptive nominee who's clearly not conservative. He's clearly not genuine, doesn't quite relate or connect with people. When he tries, it's extremely awkward and uncomfortable. It's almost like he's a malfunctioning robot. And 70% of Republican voters, whether they're actually Republicans or whether they're independents that tend to lean Republican because they're more conservative or libertarian, which is what most independents are, don't like this guy, are not motivated to go out and vote for him. Some of them are willing to hold their nose and vote for him, but that was the case with McCain, and it was just defeat. So with this guy being the presumptive nominee, how do we convince these delegates that Romney is going to be a colossal failure and a loss, and how do they have the power to make a change?
Well, I'd say one, but the delegates. You would think, being a delegate, they would know the GOP history. When it comes to conventions, especially since they're going there, that you'd think they'd want to be, if they don't know about it, they'd want to learn on it, so that they know what they're doing and what it all means and the history of it. To my understanding, not all of them do. So one of the things I think that needs to be done is the delegates need to be that do not know about the history of the conventions. And we've all heard the saying, those you do not learn from the lessons of history are doomed to repeat it. And that's something I think that needs to really stick with the delegates. If they choose to make this be a convention that has just been, pomp and circumstance as it's been for quite some time now, making it almost like the Republican pageant instead of the Republican convention. Okay, if they don't move away from that and actually do the duty of voting for the candidate that would be the best person to go up against the opposing party, okay, then history will repeat itself, and that's what they need to know. That is what the delegates need to know, is that, look, if you have Romney win on the first ballot, then as history, has shown, especially when they're not the incumbent, they lose in the general election. And that's one thing that I think the delegates need to be, told about, to get us to a second ballot in which, after Newt Gingrich does a speech and speaks to the convention, I think it'll be plainly clear, which it should be already, you would think, who the most qualified person would be. Because if you compare Romney's resume with Newt Gingrich's resume, Gingrich's resume clearly blows him away. If you kind of think of like, you're hiring someone for a job, the delegates think, okay, who are we gonna put up for a job? This is the final interview. Okay, this is the final interview here. Let's look at both of these guys' resumes. When you look at the successes of Newt Gingrich, and the conservative successes, and then you go over and look at the successes of Romney, and he had some successes while he was the governor of Massachusetts, but those successes were liberal. There were liberal successes, so that's not something we want as conservative Republicans. Okay, and so that, success on the liberal side is a failure for us. So when you compare those two resumes, who are you going to go with to be the nominee to go up against Obama? And so you take the resumes, and then you also, link that with the history of conventions and what they're really supposed to be for. I think that is when you get a Newt Gingrich nomination. To be the only candidate who can beat Barack Obama, because he's the only one. Well, Ron Paul as well, but I'm comparing Romney with Newt. who shows a stark enough contrast so that not only will bring the conservatives together to be boots on the ground, it will also bring the all-important independents who really look at that contrast to decide who's going to they're going to vote for in November.
That's a great point, Robert. I mean, I think you're absolutely right, and the delegates need to be informed of this history. And the simple fact is that if Romney can't win on that first ballot, then that just validates everything that we're saying, and we know that he can't, but it validates everything we're saying in plain sight. Look, this guy's weak. And if he's weak, why would you want to run a weak candidate in your general election? You want to run your strongest horse, not your weakest horse. You want to go out there, you know, full on, right?
Unless someone that's out there screwing with things, you know what I mean?
Well, exactly, which we know that's what they're doing, but the fact is that they can screw with things all they want, but the delegates are empowered. They do have the power, and they can make this happen. And you know, some people say, well, but, you know, how's Newt going to speak, and will he be heard? Well, you know, because he hasn't been invited to speak.
Oh, will he be heard? That Newt's real timid. He may go up there and go all quiet on you. Oh, I forgot my speech. I got to get out of here.
I don't know what to say.
Will Newt be heard? Yeah.
The fact is,
skeletons are going to be out there. That's what's going to happen.
Tex, correct me if I'm wrong, or Robert, but according to the rules as I understand them, okay, once the first ballot fails, so let's just assume that we don't have any further nominations, right? No nominees are going to be nominated before that first ballot. So the first ballot is Ron Paul and Mitt Romney. And so neither one of them has enough delegates to put them over the top, which means that no one wins the first ballot, you're going to go to a second ballot. Before that second ballot, all the state committees have to meet and put their nominations back in again. So someone has to actually be stupid enough after he fails on the first ballot to nominate Romney for a second ballot. And, of course, you know, Ron Paul delegations are going to nominate Ron Paul. And then Newt Gingrich gets nominated, and maybe, say, a Sarah Palin and maybe, I don't know, let's throw out there a Jeb Bush, okay? So all these people get nominated. Doesn't that mean that they all get to give a nomination speech at the convention before the next ballot?
Yeah, definitely. And look, the thing is, people keep coming in, like that fool last night called Dialed Into Sammy Show, you know. The guy wasn't clear on the details. I guess I had to straighten him out, right? But they're like, well, there will only be Mitt Romney and Ron Paul on the first ballot. The way things look currently, yeah, to the unobservant, okay. But the thing is, when you have the convention, the state delegations meet ahead of time and they decide who they're voting for, right? They haven't decided who they're voting for. The delegates haven't cast their votes yet. They vote by state, knuckleheads. They vote by state. Now, there's a detail you didn't know. Everything in the United States happens by state. You know why? Because we're sovereign states. Check that 9th and 10th Amendment. Yeah, you didn't see that one. Apparently, someone's not clear on the 11th either. But, you know... They will decide who they want to pick, and at that time, they can change their mind, and they can sign a pledge that says, I will totally vote Mitt Romney no matter what. You know, this is my ballot. There are many like it, but this one is mine, and I will, you know, all that kind of nonsense. And then they get there, and they're like, hey, I changed my mind. Yeah, back then, I was totally wrong. Now, it's got stinky pants all over the place, stinky pants.
So what you're saying is that if some of the delegates feel morally bound because they signed something or they said something that they would vote for this guy or that guy, even though clearly the Republican rules themselves state that state binding does not apply at the national convention, and we also know that federal law prevents any kind of binding, but it could be a moral obligation. Well, the question is there moral obligation to hold on to that piece of paper that they signed how many months ago? Or is there moral obligation to nominate the best candidate who can actually win for the party in the coming, well, I guess it'll be 60 days from the convention?
Hold on. The RNC, right, they're looking at these guys who are bound, and they're like, look at these dudes. These are like those guys on those Japanese islands who didn't know the war was over. They got no ammo. They hadn't been contacted by anybody in like 3 months or something. They're freaking eating their boot leather and everything, and they come up like, the war's over. Like, no, the war would never be over. Like, dude, seriously, who was your drill sergeant? I mean, my God. You talk about enthusiasm. This guy over here on this island for, like, months, this dude. You know, chill out, dude. It's over, okay? You know, But these people are like, well, I signed a piece of paper, so I have a moral responsibility and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Well, the piece of paper you signed is the TPS cover sheet, in case you don't know what TPS stands for. Total piece of shit. Cover sheet. That's what you signed, right? So at the time, you got played. You got tricked. So now you got a moral obligation to a trick. Some guy tricked you. And now you have a moral obligation to play along with the trick. I don't know. I don't make those kind of decisions because, you know, I'm not a knucklehead. But apparently people do. You know, so if you've got a moral obligation to be an idiot, okay, that's fine. I understand that, but I'm going to laugh at you, you know, because I like to laugh. I like the world loves a clown. You got to see a clown, right? Look at this clown. Going over here, signed a TPS cover sheet here. He's going to go vote Romney, this dude. Look at him, freaking on that island, eating his belt. Seriously, who talked to this guy? I don't know. It's hilarious. It's historical.
I think it would be absolutely hysterical and historical if it weren't so serious. But, Robert, you wanted to chime in on that. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, on the moral question, it's one, you have a piece of paper, and then you have the duty of a delegate. And the duty of the delegate trumps any piece of paper that they would sign, and this is why I think that is the case. I think that is true is because no matter what convention you'll ever a delegate will ever be at, their duty will always be to get the best candidate who can defeat the opposing candidate of the other party. No matter what, that is a constant. The piece of paper, that's just something that the Romney campaign and others, you know, have trumped up. It's not, that's not a constant. Those kind of things aren't constant. Even the results of primaries are not constant. Just because, you know, so that being said, you know, that's why I'm saying the moral obligation goes to what always has and what should, you know, in the foreseeable future, you would think, always will be. That's where their moral, that's where their the morality resides, in my opinion.
Well, I would agree with that, Robert. I mean, the fact is that you basically, I mean, look, let's understand something. These delegates hold a public office. This is something people don't understand. I mean, maybe they think a delegate is just a number on CNN. A delegate is a person who was nominated, campaigned, was voted on, and now holds a public office. When you hold a public office of trust, you are in a position that requires the utmost deference to the respect for that office. Being a delegate is an office. You have been assigned power. Delegated power by the people who are sovereign in the state from which you come and the district from which you come to convene in Congress at the convention according to the rules that we have all agreed to choose the best person to be the chief executive of the country or potentially the chief executive of the country because they don't get to choose the president, they get to choose the nominee who then has to campaign, and to choose the person who would be the backup to that person. This is an awesome responsibility, and it is a moral responsibility. And signing a piece of paper because your state or your caucus or whatever it is said that you have to agree that these are the results of the primary and you're going to adhere to them, okay, and you're going to vote for this guy, okay, that has no standing in federal law, and this is a federal election because it is nationwide, it is not state-specific, and that has no standing, morally speaking, especially if you think that the primary or caucus process has some problems. And we know for a fact that we have problems. First of all, and as Barbara Haney, who's been on the show, has brought up several times, Romney's later victories, where he was actually scoring higher than 25%, defy the central limit theorem. It's a statistical impossibility for him to keep getting those higher scores. We also know that he lowered voter turnout. You can't win if you suppress voter turnout. You only win by increasing voter turnout. And we know that in many places we've had alternate conventions, we've had altercations, we've had delegates who have been dispossessed or someone's trying to replace them. So there's all sorts of things going on that are not quite right. If you have knowledge of that, and if you're a delegate, you'd better have knowledge of that, and if they don't have knowledge of that, you people listening better make them have knowledge of that, then your moral obligation is not to adhere to something that may have been actually manipulated, but to adhere to the office. So I agree with you 100%, Robert. That office is a very serious position because you're picking the person who is is best suited to win and govern. It's not
absolutely
one or the other.
And, let me just add something real quick to that, Rex, because or Dan, whoever. Because the thing is, in some states, they actually hold elections at the convention, and they pick these people. But in other ones, they don't. They pick them behind closed doors. Like New York, they just pick. It's like, I don't know, that guy looks like a boob. He looks like he'd say yes. That guy looks like a yes man. We got any yes men here? If there are yes men here, I'll say yes. Yes. Okay. So we got yes men. All right. So now you're the delegate. That's how they do it up there.
Well, hey, folks, I appreciate you having me come in. Thanks, Tex. Thanks, Rex, very much. But I get to jump off here. And I'm sure I'll be talking to you guys later. Thank you very much, and
hey,
great show.
Appreciate it, Robert. Real quick before you go, I know you got to run, and I appreciate you calling in. Do you want to just tell everybody about your show?
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it. My show is Bard's Logic Political Talk. And it's on Sunday through Thursday evening from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. That's Eastern time. And I cover a variety of topics, and which if you guys give me time, I'll elaborate a little bit, if that's okay. But
yes,
I'll just
do
mainly about this Thursday. Okay, I'll just do mainly this Thursday. I'm really happy to announce I have an interview with Aubrey Ashburn. And if you're someone who's come to my show and listen to the end of it, she's the one who sings the song at the end title. So I appreciate people to come and show their support next Thursday. But thanks you guys again for letting me plug that in. Appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Robert.
Anytime.
Thanks for coming on. You have a great night.
Great. You too. Take care, guys. Talk to you later. Bye.
Live long and prosper.
Tex, I sometimes wonder, and I know that, you know, you and I are obviously a little irreverent. Sometimes we get a little colorful and we have a little fun. But I sometimes wonder if people are aware of the seriousness of this situation. I mean, you know, you run and become a delegate. That's a pretty serious thing. You're voting for president. That's a pretty serious thing. This isn't the kind of a job. I mean, you think about it. You want to go work at a Chick-fil-A, right? Let's just. I feel like being the guy at the drive-through at the Chick-fil-A. I want that job. You go. You apply for the job. They're going to check you out, right? I mean, they're going to look at your work experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
They want to know your social security number. They want to know if you're eligible for work. They want to know your age.
How's he frying my chicken all of a sudden? This guy filling out an application, thinking he could fry my chicken. Who is he? Right? They ask
exactly. Okay. This is for a job at a Chick-fil-A. So now we're talking about a job for the highest office in the world. Okay, this is the President of the United States. Now, I'm not saying that he's emperor or king or praetor or governor or anything else. He is the chief executive, which means that he is to run the government, not the country. We run the country. To run the government according to the laws passed by the legislative branch, and to also be the commander-in-chief of the armed forces in times of emergency and war. Okay. So this is a serious thing, and it's a lot of power. Don't we want to know a little bit more about this guy than the guy that fries our chicken sandwich?
No, apparently some people don't. give me that sandwich. I want to eat it now. Oh, no, somebody put a booger in it.
Yes, but it's a little frightening because some people take this casually, like, you know, hey, look, get behind Romney, he's the guy. Well, if the rules say that he's not the guy until he's made the guy at the convention and he's not that guy, then don't I have a right to know what kind of guy he is? And people say, well, look at his website. He says he's pro-life, and he says that he's, you know, he was just campaigning with the Tea Party candidate in Indiana. And, you know, okay, it's great he's doing all these things now. The guy's trying to apply. I mean, think about it, right? When somebody goes for a job interview and they're asked usually these basic questions, what do you think your greatest strength is there, Tex? And you go, well, you know, I'm an organized guy, and I'm motivated, and I'm a people person. And what would you say your three weaknesses are? Oh, well, I think my biggest weakness is that I overwork, and I spend too much time focusing on my activities at work, and I have trouble shirking my responsibilities. Okay, those aren't weaknesses. Okay, what you're doing is you're trying to negatively portray your strengths because you're trying to get the job. Okay, but as the guy who's hiring you, I want to know, what exactly are your weaknesses? Are you prone to being tardy? Are you faking your credentials? Are you faking your credentials and maybe you're not as competent as I thought? So, you know, that's what happens in interviews. So the guy's interviewing for the job right now, and he's interviewing for the job in the alleged party on the right, so he's going to be pro-life and he's going to be pro-gun and, you know, I killed Varman and I've been a lifetime member of the NRA, blah, 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 blah. Okay, guy, before you tell me all these things which you know I want to hear, let me know who you really are. Well, when we look at his record, is he anything close to even being a moderate conservative?
Moderate conservative. Apparently that applies to 100% of every human being walking around planet Earth. They're all moderate conservatives, everybody. You know, even like Joseph Stalin, that dude, moderate conservative. Turns out he has some slightly moderate conservative view on something. So now he's a moderate conservative.
Yeah, you know, it sounds like a con job to me.
Yeah, they weaken that brand down to about nothing. For those of you playing at home, that moderate conservative, you know, that's like making love in a canoe. It's fucking close to water, you know. It's like you open a bag, there's one chip in it. How much more can they water this thing down? You know, what's going to be left? One atom of a chip? I don't know.
Yeah, he might be saying the right things, but he doesn't believe them and he doesn't say them the right way, but that's besides the point. The fact is his record clearly indicates, and now I've heard this before also, okay? Well, he's the guy, we got to get behind him, and, you know, he's matured and he's become more conservative. Well, you know, I might buy that because some people do, okay? You know, I would argue that, oh, I don't know, Ronald Reagan did, right? I mean, he was a New Deal FDR Democrat and moved strongly away from that when he realized it was a colossal failure. But I don't see that with Mitt Romney, for example, and this is the kind of stuff you people have to tell your delegates. This is really important. This is very, very serious, and you really need to do this. Okay? The guy says he's pro-life. Now, there are some people in the GOP and Republican voters who pro-life is just not a major issue for them. Okay? There are some libertarians that are pro-life and some that aren't. But the fact is that the party platform is pro-life, and Republican candidates for president cannot win without the pro-life vote, right? So Romney says, you know, I'm pro-life. His record as governor in Massachusetts indicate that he's not. In Massachusetts, he put abortion into his socialized health care plan. He put Planned Parenthood on the board for that review and didn't put a pro-life organization on there. He nominated judges that were not pro-life. And people say, well, that was back then, but he's changed, right? He's changed and he's moved on. Well, if that's the case, then why would this guy, this May, okay, after he was already allegedly the presumptive nominee, go down to Florida and sit with the executives of Teva Pharmaceuticals collecting $50,000 a plate fundraising money from a company that manufactures an abortifacient, which is a drug that will actually dislodge a fetus and kill it? Does that comport? Do his actions comport with his stance? No, they don't. So if you're going to lose the pro-life vote, you're going to lose the election. And I wish that that were his only problem. But where does he stand on the National Defense and Authorization Act, which repeals half of the Bill of Rights? He's all for it. Where does he stand on the Federal Reserve? Is he like Ron Paul? Not even close. Okay, he likes Ben Bernanke. He likes the Federal Reserve. Why would that be? Because Mitt Romney, as at Boston Consulting and Bain Capital, was one of the beneficiaries of the warped monetary policies of the Federal Reserve. Now, the Federal Reserve is robbing us blind. Everybody listening to this call, okay, just imagine that the governor of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, okay, the New York branch, which is really the one that's in charge of everything, constantly has his hand in your back pocket and is taking out 2 or 3 cents constantly. So as you're walking around, you're just bleeding money, and he's taking it from you. That's exactly what's happening here. So you're being robbed, and who's being enriched? Well, first, the Federal Reserve Bank and anybody whom they give the money to first. Mitt Romney's in favor of this. Now, you would think, well, but Barack Obama isn't, right, because he's a man of the people, and he wants us to thrive, and it's the 99 versus the 1%. Wrong. Barack Obama's for it just as much as Mitt Romney. They might have slightly different reasons as to why, but they're both in favor of it. The only candidate who strongly staunchly since the beginning of his career been very active about exposing the Federal Reserve is Dr. Ron Paul. And for that reason alone, whether you agree with him on anything else, whether it be his drug policy, foreign policy, or anything else, for that reason alone, you need to applaud that man because he has made this issue very, very important. And because he has such a following and he has so many delegates, this is going to be an issue discussed at the convention. The only other Republican candidate of the entire slate that we had this year that even addressed this issue was which one, Tex? Speaker Newt Gingrich.
Exactly. Sorry, they just brought my spaghetti, and you were doing a good job, and then you throw it to me. What are you doing? Well, actually, I just asked for the sauce because in this, probably my stomach's turning. You know, I'm gonna can't have this.
Well, you know, Sammy talked about sauce, so we got a little excited there. I got you.
Yeah, no,
but yes,
no. While you and Cheddar were doing your thing, I muted and I ordered the marinara. Anyway, go ahead. What was the question?
Well, the question was, you know, I was talking about the Federal Reserve and Keynesian economics and, you know, the whole mess of counterfeiting money and ripping the people off that Barack Obama and Mitt Romney are both beneficiaries of it and in favor of it, and that Ron Paul's staunchly been against it. Where does Newt Gingrich stand?
Exactly. I mean, that's the thing with all this risk deferral. Someone's got their finger in my ass wallet all the time. I'm walking around. Some dude doesn't want any risk. He wants me to assume his risk. Who the hell are you? Who are these guys? You know, all of a sudden, hey, turns out I'm an idiot over here. You know, I got like a Harvard degree, Yale degree, most impressive, whatever, but really I was just doing beer bongs or whatever in college, and the professor said something, and I fell asleep. And now, turns out because of my dad, I'm like president of this major company. Well, I don't know what I'm doing, so here's the deal. I want to push all my risks onto the government and onto the taxpayer. So I'm rolling around just as an American citizen. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm trying to make my way here, you know, I didn't get all the advantages in life, you know, someone kicked me in the head, and then a dude, you know, punched me in the face, I got attacked by a dog or whatever the hell happened to me, you know, I was born with this circumstance, that circumstance, you know, I got achy, breaky hip pelvis or whatever's going on with me, you know, but I'm just trying to survive, do my thing. And then you turn around, and like all these major industries, they got their finger in your ass wallet. You're like, what's going on? What are these dudes doing? You know, I thought you were good. You're the captain of the industry, and you're, like, terrible. You suck at it. You just completely suck at it, you know? I mean, there's no end to this. There's no end to this.
We're going to put an end to this, Tex, and that's what this broker convention is about. We're putting an end to this because this is our country. This is a republic. It's free markets. It is not central bank. It is sound money. We're taking it back, and we're going to make it happen, and that's why you, everybody listening, and all of your friends, and even the people that you don't know, you bump into at the gas station or while you're buying cigarettes or if you're out there, you know, at church or what, wherever you bump into people, you grab them and you tell them to contact the delegates and let them know that we need a real nominee, because what we're talking about here is whether this country goes on as a republic or falls into the slow decay of socialism. And earlier you mentioned that you got a little distracted there with your sauce. Well, I know somebody else who was dealing with some sauce, and it sounded pretty yummy. That's Sam Sanford. And Sammy, you're back on the line. How are you?
I just got through pulling the spaghetti sauce off, and after it simmered for over an hour with homemade sauce with fresh garlic and oregano, and it simmered for about an hour. It'll probably be better tomorrow.
Mm.
But
yeah, that's good stuff.
I could be there in 15 hours.
But I mean, the main thing is Newt Gingrich is the only one that personifies the conservative movement. I mean, he is out there, and yes, I would vote for Ron Paul as my president. I think that's probably what is pissing off some people, because I would say I would vote for Ron Paul.
Well, what's your other option? I would vote for Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney? I mean, that what kind of option is that?
hell no, I will never vote for Mitt Romney. Not one time in my life. He will never get my vote.
I'm with you,
Sammy.
And
y'all know how I am about that. And
absolutely.
And
yeah, I don't get anybody. I don't understand anybody that would call you and get upset with you because you're promoting Newt Gingrich faithfully every night, 3 hours a night, nonstop. Okay, I don't see how anybody could have issue with you if they're conservative or Newt Gingrich supporter simply because you gave a nod to Ron Paul. Hey, I want Newt Gingrich too, and I'm going to work my butt off to get Newt Gingrich, and I'm going to contact every delegate and tell them, hey, it's Newt Gingrich. But if the convention decides that, hey, you know what, it's going to be Ron Paul, well, that's what the convention decides. But the problem is that what these Mitt Romney people are trying to do is take the decision of the convention away.
Exactly. And as that one person had posted, I said, these are people that are probably Mitt Romney supporters, and they never were really true fans of my show. And this one person said, oh, you're losing a few listeners. And
hey, Sammy, many are chosen. Many are called, but few are chosen. So, oh, no, I'm losing a guy. Oh, I got a fool over there. I lost that fool. Now I'm going to change everything so I can get this one fool. Hey, go to hell, dude. Go to hell. You know, clock out. It's not for
clock
you.
Out.
Nobody cares about your opinion.
And we are here fighting for our freedom, and we're fighting our last battle, and our days are numbered. If we do not win this in Tampa, our country is screwed.
Well, then there's no if, Sammy. We're going to burn our ships, just like when Hernan Cortez came here to Mexico, and he burned the ships and told all his Spanish conquistadors, here's the deal. We're conquering Mexico City. There's no ship to go back home, so win or die, okay? And we know this for a fact that in the war for independence from Great Britain, our patriotic revolutionary guys, they said victory or death, okay? And that doesn't mean, go out there, start shooting people, okay? I'm not talking about that before anybody goes insane. I'm talking about the ballot. I'm talking about the convention. I'm talking about the GOP rules. These are the levers of power.
The system works. Just work the system. Everything's fine.
Exactly. Those levers in the system that we've been given, those levers of power work. We have to make them work. When I say victory or death, I'm agreeing with you, Sammy. If we don't work for that victory and we don't get that victory, this country will start on a ever-increasing decline towards nothingness. And that would be a shame, not just for us, because it is our inheritance, this country, and we have a duty to hand it on to our posterity. It would be a disaster for the whole world. To denigrate Ron Paul, who is I don't agree with Ron Paul on a lot of things, okay, but I do agree with him on some. But to denigrate him and say that somehow he's dangerous, this man is a patriot. This man has served this country. This man has been a Republican longer than Mitt Romney. So if I tell someone, hey, I might, even if I were to say, I don't want to vote for Newt Gingrich, I want to vote for Ron Paul, what right does anybody have to say anything about that? Because the man is a Republican and he's a patriot. The idiots are the ones that are telling me, oh, vote for Mitt Romney. He's a liberal Democrat who just became a Republican, but he's the guy. That's insane. Now, just to be clear, I'm a Newt Gingrich guy. I'm a Newt Gingrich guy. But Ron Paul's a Republican and a patriot, and he has a right to be heard at the convention. Mitt Romney, he has no right to be heard at the convention because Mitt Romney's an interloper. He comes from the other side. He's the enemy.
Exactly. Rex.
Absolutely.
I want to interject this here on my family heritage. The founding father of the Sanford clan here in the USA, if you're Caucasian and your last name is Samford, you come from one branch. They arrived at the James River settlement in Virginia, a.k.a. Jamestown.
Mm-hmm.
My family is directly descended from Betsy Ross. And I cannot let down my patriot family and shut up and let these damn idiots
I hear you, Sammy.
Infuriates me. I'm sorry. I have fought I've been out here fighting since 2007. I used to post videos every day, but once the liberal movement, aka Fox News, got in there, I will not post any more videos because I'm going to stand up for freedom, I'm going to stand up for our country, and I'm going to stand up and protect my little Jazzy girls and Aiden's futures of their life. And when Newt saw Jazzy Girl's t-shirt that Donna Kaiser made for her, he says, I like that.
And what was on that t-shirt, Sammy?
It said Newt 2012.
Newt 2012. Right on. That's great. Sammy, you're a patriot. You're sacrificing. You're working very hard. And you have a right to be a little angry. Now look, for people that are listening who are of the persuasion that conflict is bad or it's unchristian, let's be clear about a few things, okay? There's anger where you're trying to gain vengeance or you're trying to hurt the other person, and then there's righteous indignation. What Sammy just exhibited, what we exhibit here, maybe Tex and I are a little more irreverent than Sammy, but what we're exhibiting here is righteous indignation. And everyone,
I'm just more irritated.
If you're a patriot, you have a right to have righteous indignation, because what is happening here is that these people are trying to manage the decline of the country. A country that, whether you came here yesterday through the front door, not the back door, or like Sammy, you have a heritage that goes back to the first colonies, okay, is a right that you've been given, and you have a duty and a responsibility to hand it on to the next generations. And you have a right to be angry because these people are trying to take that away from you. They are trying to destroy the great things that this country stands for. Now, you can always point out to the mistakes and the bad things we've done, and we've certainly had our share of them in this country, okay? But we're humans, and we make mistakes. The difference is that in America, we have a system and a process that we've been given that is not perfect, but it's very close. And it might be terrible, but it's the best system that's ever been devised on the face of the planet. And that is to correct
Amen.
Our mistakes and to transcend them. Remember something. Those founding fathers, many of whom owned African slaves, wrote documents that transcended their prejudice. Okay? Thomas Jefferson owned African slaves. Slavery is abhorrent. If you're a Christian, it is unbiblical. Okay? And it is just wrong. However, he wrote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights," unalienable meaning that they are rights that cannot be abrogated, you don't even have the right to get rid of them yourself, "to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." Okay? That is very important, because that true natural law, God-given sentiment there, okay, that transcended his own prejudice. And we've corrected many of those problems, not all of them. We've still got a way to go. But that is what we're fighting for. And there are two views at war here. There's the view that we have sovereign rights given to us by God, protected by the government that we have formed through our states, which have ceded certain powers to the federal government. Okay? Or you have this view that the government and those in charge of it, which are generally wealthy bankers and the capitalist class, and I'm not talking about capitalists in the sense of free market capitalism, I'm talking about those who control capital, that our rights come from them. Those aren't rights. Now it becomes a system of privilege. Either you're in with these guys because you're in their favorite union, or you're a government employee, or you belong to this class or this constituency, and you get favors from them, or you have unalienable rights. Those are the two views that are competing here. Barack Obama is of the mindset that the government grants you your rights. Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul are of the mindset that God grants you your right and government has the responsibility to protect that. Mitt Romney, I'm not sure where he stands. The guy is a blank slate. He is like, you know, tepid candidate A. Let's run this guy. And the reason I say it really doesn't matter what he believes, because the simple fact is that if you support Mitt Romney, if you're a delegate voting for Mitt Romney, if you are a non-delegate who's planning on voting for Mitt Romney in November and you're actually fighting for promoting him and supporting him now, then what you are in effect doing is supporting Barack Obama and his view that the government gives us our rights. That's how serious this is, and that's why you just heard that righteous indignation coming from Sammy. And Sammy, God bless you for fighting out there every night, and thank you for inspiring Tex and I to at least broadcast two nights a week, and for having us as guests on your show.
Well, Tex and Rex, y'all are awesome patriots, and you know I will never shut up, and I'll never bow down, never cowtail to a liberal, a.k.a. Mittens. Never, ever in my life. I am fighting for my grandkids. I mean, I'm out here fighting for my grandkids. But I'm going to get off here because I got to get ready for my show real soon. But God bless you.
Well,
thanks
Sammy,
a lot,
Grammy,
for everything you've done. I mean, you really had the big pole in this tent. So, you know, thank you for getting this started, getting us started, and everything you've done. So,
but Barack Obama and Mitt Romney were a danger to our freedom. And when the American people don't realize that, when they realize that, it will be too late. And we have to stand for constitutional conservative values, which is states' rights, limited government, and get the government the hell out of our life.
Right on, Sammy. Right on. Well, thank you so much.
The Tea Party movement has dished the conservative movement, and which really pisses me off. It blows my mind. I'm still with the Tea Party.
It excites me because now I have FOF. Now I know friend from foe.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I like having FOF.
But God bless you all, and you keep on rocking, and we'll see you on my show tonight.
Absolutely, Sammy.
Right,
thank you so
Sammy.
Much for calling
Sammy,
in.
Thanks for dialing in.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Sammy Sanford broadcasts on Blog Talk Radio from 10 p.m. to 1 p.m. Every day of the week. He will be on the air for the next 21 days until convention. So I suggest you search his show on Blog Talk Radio, and you will usually find Tex and Rex, or Tex or Rex, on Sammy's show. And to that end, I want to say that everything that we just talked about and the righteous indignation that Sammy rightfully displayed, that's what you should have, that fire in your belly, and then take it and do something. And there's a lot of things you can do. Listening to us here is only to get information, to call in, to be in the chat, to question things and ask, you know, how does this work and how does that work and why is this important? We're here to answer whatever we can. And then you have to go do something with it. The fact is that the man who owns all of the books in the world and never opens them up to read is the same as the man who can't read. So you have the power at your disposal, but you have to use it. And right now, you're going to get a lot of flack about, oh, you're not voting Romney, you're supporting Obama. You're not voting. Unless you're a delegate listening to this show, you have no vote until November 6th. Right now, it is all about the votes of those delegates. But you have a voice because those people were empowered by you. Those people are beholden to their constituency to exercise the right judgment to defeat the current occupant of the White House with a nominee who can actually win. Exercise your power. You can contact your state elections board and or your Republican Party, you know, state headquarters, and get the list of your delegates. And you can write to all the delegates, by the way. It would be great if you're up to it. You know, just write 10, 15 letters a day and mail them out for the next 21 days. You'll get every delegate. But it is your responsibility at least to contact the delegates of your state or commonwealth, and let them know how you feel. Let them know that Barack Obama cannot win. Let them know that we need to pick up seats in the Senate and in the House, that we need a Speaker of the House who actually has a spine, okay, and let them know that you want them to nominate a true conservative, one who can draw a stark and clear contrast with Barack Obama and utterly defeat him come November 6th. So write your delegates. You can call them. If you get their phone number, call them and tell them this. Be polite. These people are empowered and they hold an office of respect, but you need to be convincing. You need to let them know Mitt Romney hasn't released his tax returns. That's a problem. His father was the one who set the precedent for 12 years of tax returns. John McCain received all of Mitt Romney's tax returns in 2008 when John McCain was vetting him for vice president. And after looking at those tax returns, John McCain chose Sarah Palin instead of Mitt Romney. So what is in those things? Now, the liability issue here is that whether there's something problematic in those tax returns or not, okay, people are speculating that there is. That speculation is a campaign-killing speculation. They have to be released. Furthermore, if there is something in them, we, as Republican voters, have a right to know what's in them before we hitch our wagon to this guy, okay? Because I guarantee you that the Democratic Party, the mainstream media, and all those supporting Barack Obama are going to release that information. So if there's something in there that's a problem, we need to know about it now, okay? He's not releasing it. So that's a serious problem. And you can point fingers and say, well, Barack Obama hasn't released his school records. I agree. But guess what? Barack Obama, he's not running for the nomination of this party. So right now I don't care about him. He needs to be defeated in November. We need somebody to defeat him. That person is not Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney also has some problems with his SEC filings regarding Bain Capital. He said that he retired at a certain point, but the SEC filings show something else. There could be something problematic there. There could be something illegal there. We have a right to know that full story before we make him the nominee. These are the things you have to tell your delegates. Now, if you're not comfortable calling them and you're not particularly good at writing a letter, and this letter should be, as Tex has pointed out many times, one page, two pages max, bullet points, really hitting the high points and just saying, please nominate somebody who doesn't have all these liabilities, Mitt Romney's going to lose to Barack Obama. You can also find most of these delegates on Facebook. You can communicate with a wider audience on Facebook. You can communicate with these delegates and the RNC leadership on Twitter. Okay, there are many things you can do. Find what you're suited for. Find what you're good at. Okay, but do something. And most importantly, tell everybody you know to do something. We've got 3 weeks. In 3 weeks, if millions of us stand up and tell them, these people have to come back to their constituencies, and most of them want to win. You have to tell them that Mitt Romney is not going to win. Barack Obama is going to win if you support Mitt Romney. Get another candidate. That's the most important thing to do. And I know sometimes it's hard to understand. How can this be? The guy wears an elephant jersey. So if he's the guy, isn't he better than Barack Obama? Well, it depends on how you define better. He's better than Barack Obama because I guess he's in this party. But I don't know how much better it is if he doesn't believe in the things that we believe in. And the very simple fact is that this all comes down to a simple perception of this false left-right paradigm where we think the liberals are on the left, the conservatives are on the right, I'm right-leaning, so I'm voting for whoever is not Barack Obama, that happens to be Mitt Romney. That's not the way it works. Would you agree, Tex? Is that a false paradigm?
Yeah. Look, we're not watching a football game, knucklehead. These dudes are controlling our fate because you empowered them, because you go and you vote for them. You're not voting for, oh, I think this horse is going to win. I'm going to win that car if I vote for the winner. I'm going to win that car. No, you're not. They're going to take that car, you idiot. Pay attention. These guys, they don't even know what they're doing. Don't vote. If you don't know what's going on, don't vote. Do the country a favor. If you really don't know what's going on, you're confused, just take this one off, you know? But if you're engaged, you think the country's in trouble, start paying attention.
Exactly. And the fact is that a true power paradigm, if you really want to simplify it and understand that there's two kinds of extremes in the political spectrum and try to figure out where you are. Okay, on one extreme, let's call it the left, you have total power and total government. Whether it is a monarchy, a democracy, a dictatorship, it doesn't matter. Whatever form it takes, okay, it is total power, meaning the government controls resources, and controls rights. You get to do only what they allow you to do. You can't do anything they don't allow you to do, and the resources are only available through some kind of agreement from the government. If you're part of the favored class, whatever class that might be, whether it's the nobility in a monarchy or the party in a communist dictatorship, whatever that might be, those are the people who will be favored until they fall out of favor, and then they get their heads chopped off. On the extreme other side, let's call it the right, you have no government at all. That's anarchy. That is a state where there is no legal structure or extra objective kind of authority to arbitrate differences. So what you end up with is a will to power, okay? In one, on the left extreme, total government, they have all the power. On the right extreme, which is anarchy and no government, you're going to have various interests fighting for power. This is the kind of situation you see in the third world, where kind of government is broken down and these warlords sort of rise up and make their own clans. And it essentially mimics the other side, except that it's diffused in the sense that in certain localities, one warlord or another is in control, or in this fiefdom or that city-state, but there is no true freedom for everybody else. This was when this country was founded, when we declared our independence from Great Britain, we drafted the Articles of Confederation. Those articles put us slightly to the left of the extreme right of anarchy. We had a central government, but it couldn't raise taxes. It was relatively weak, and some of the states, all the states were stronger, and some of the states were causing problems with each other, and the federal government had no way of actually arbitrating these differences. Massachusetts threatened to secede. Massachusetts solely declared war on Canada. They were raiding Canada. Some of the states were actually about to go to war with each other. It wasn't a great situation. So what happened is the American people said, okay, these Articles of Confederation aren't working. They need to be reformed. We need to, you know, change it a little bit. So they elected delegates to the Congress, which means like a political convention. Those delegates convened, and instead of reforming the Articles of Confederation, they rewrote them. That's where the U.S. Constitution comes from, the Constitution for these United States. The important thing to remember is that Constitution created the federal government. It did not exist beforehand. The states did. So the states took the power which the people gave to the states, and they took some of that power and they gave it to these delegates, and these delegates created the federal government with it, which has very specific enumerated powers. It was stronger than the Articles of Confederation, a little bit further to the left than the Articles of Confederation and anarchy, but not so far to the left that it even closely resembled any kind of total government control or even today's government. And those enumerated powers are outlined in the Constitution. The government is supposed to be responsible for everything that that Constitution says it's responsible for and nothing else. In fact, some people, the anti-federalists, were so concerned that the Constitution was too strong that they insisted on amendments being added to the Constitution according to the amendment process, which is outlined in Article 5. And if you don't know it, go online, find a copy of the Constitution and read it, because the Constitution is the law. The Constitution is the rules by which we play, and you'd better know it. They amended it, and the 9th and 10th Amendments specifically state that power not specifically given to the government in the Constitution is reserved to the people and to the states. Our government has overstepped those bounds, and we've allowed it for too long. Now, I'm not saying that Ron Paul or Newt Gingrich is going to save the country and save the day, okay? They're just men. But that Constitution does create the office of the presidency. It's a pretty powerful office. Today, it's certainly far more powerful than it's supposed to be. If you give that power to a man like Barack Obama without any concern for re-election, okay, which is exactly what voting for Mitt Romney does, then the Constitution is going to fall apart. I'm not saying we can't rebuild it, but now you're talking about a much longer battle, probably one that won't be completed in your lifetime. Maybe your children's children's children might be free again. Okay? You don't have a right to put that burden on them. You have to stand up, and you have to stand up now. Okay? So the idea is that that's what we're fighting for. Newt Gingrich is a man who actually rolled back government. He actually cut taxes. He actually balanced the federal budget. Granted, it was by Washington, D.C. terms as opposed to, you know, normal economic terms, but it's the closest that you've ever seen to balanced budgets in your lifetime. He's moved in the right direction. He's proven that he can be effective and do it despite opposition in his own party and despite a liberal president. Give him the reins of power. Ron Paul is a man who is principled about the Constitution. I would argue that he hasn't been very effective, but I think that he has a role to play, especially in bringing to light the chicanery of the Federal Reserve and auditing, exposing, and ending that thing, because it is the heart of the problem in this country. This is what we're talking about. This is why we have a brokered convention. This is not the playoffs. This is not the Super Bowl. This is not gymnastics at the Olympics. This is your country. This is your life. This is the future of your children. And so this is very serious. And that's how serious and awesome the responsibility these delegates have. And your responsibility is very serious, too, because you have to inform these people. Don't for a minute think, that Mitt Romney can defeat Barack Obama. And if that crosses your mind for even 1 second, ask yourself, what would be better if Mitt Romney defeated Barack Obama? He's designed to fail. But if it happens to succeed, let's say there's a malfunction like there was in Massachusetts where it became governor, if it by accident succeeds, it's not pro-life, okay? It doesn't believe in the Constitution. It likes the Federal Reserve, okay? Mitt Romney likes the NDAA. Mitt Romney developed the socialized health care plan model on which Obamacare was based. Many of the same people that worked on both of them are on it. In fact, one of them said, and he worked on both of them, he says, it's the same effing bill, okay? So if this guy created the piece of legislation
before...
Wait,
could you repeat that? I didn't hear it. He said what?
He said it's the same effing bill.
Oh, fucking. You mean the same fucking bill. Okay, yeah, now I got you. All right.
And that's an exact quote. That's exactly what he said. Okay, that's a quote. That's what the guy said. I can't remember his name right now, but I can look it up. You can look it up. It's a direct quote from a guy who worked on both bills. And the fact is that you hate Obamacare. If you don't, then I would suspect that you're a liberal and a Democrat. But if you're listening to this show, odds are you hate Obamacare. If you hate Obamacare and you want it repealed and you want it gone, then why would you give power to the guy that created the model for it? He won't change it. He won't get rid of it. He might adjust it and tweak it a little bit, but he won't get rid of it. He likes it, okay? So that's the issue here. So are you a Ron Paul supporter? Are you a Newt Gingrich supporter? Well, are you anybody but Romney? Are you perhaps interested in Sarah Palin, okay? That's what the convention is supposed to be about. You empower your delegates. The first thing that they have to realize is Romney will lose, and they need to repeal and replace Mitt Romney in August, so that we can defeat Barack Obama in November. Who do we defeat him with? Well, that's the responsibility of the delegates to determine at the convention when they make the nominations by each state and the people go up there and make their case and the delegates use the judgment that we've empowered them to employ to pick the best candidate. I think that's Speaker Newt Gingrich for all the reasons we've highlighted and we will continue to highlight, but it could be Ron Paul, maybe it's Sarah Palin. I don't know. What I do know for a fact, and Tex, I think you'll agree with me on this 100%, is that Mitt Romney is the worst possible thing that can come out of that convention for the Republican Party and this country. Would you agree?
It's almost like he was designed at an East German presidential candidate factory. Almost. But he was, so, you know, there's that. He's designed to lose.
Yeah.
that's his goal. They're not making mistakes over there. They're doing a good job with this Romney thing, you know? It's designed to fail. Yes, absolutely. I mean, he's not the worst if you want to lose. He's the best if you want to lose. But if you actually want to win, he's the worst. He's designed that way.
And Tex, considering that he's the worst. Do you agree with me that everybody should convey this information to their delegates and stop fighting with each other because none of us can vote till November 6th?
Exactly. All this nonsense, shouting at people, you know, I don't vote again until November. A lot of you guys don't vote again until November. Focus on the delegates and tell them, like, hey, I think we got a serious problem here. So maybe you signed a TPS cover sheet saying that you're going to vote for Mitt Romney, but that was a total piece of shit cover sheet you totally signed, so who cares about it, right? We got to fix the country. I swear to God, you come back, I find out you voted Romney. I don't know what I'm going to do. My head's going to explode, or someone's head's going to explode. Something's going on, but, you know, there's going to be heart attacks across the land. You know, dude, get your head back in the game. These delegates think they're going, oh, no, now I'm someone. Now I've signed a TPS cover sheet that binds me, and so now I've got the power, and it's a TPS cover sheet, knucklehead. Who cares about it? You know, fart on the thing, whatever, burn it in the fire. Who cares? Yeah, when I signed it, I thought it was, like, real important. Then it turns out someone pulled the wool over my eyes, so I don't care about it anymore. Come after me. What are you going to do? The Republican Party doesn't even acknowledge that stuff. Like, look at these dudes. These dudes rolling in, signing their TPS cover sheets, you know, report men doing their, quote, duty or whatever. Like, what? These guys are like idiots. Like, you know, why don't we just have zombies vote for us instead? That would be awesome. Just gonna, you know, I can't vote today. I'm just going to sit on the couch and get zombies to do all my stuff today. Just, Romney, you know.
I thought zombies only voted in the Democratic Party. I didn't know their zombies were allowed to vote in the Republican Party.
Yeah. Well, it turns out, you know, we got light blue, right? You know, so those light blue guys are good, right? You got those Razorbacks and those Raging Cajuns over there. You know, those dudes, I just want to tell you, those are neighboring states, knuckleheads. Those guys over there, they don't even know. Those are neighboring states, right? So, you know, those are Texans. They got a little lower octane in them. But, you know, go ahead and give them some guff. See what happens to you. Because I could hear the screaming all the way from under here in this water. go roll up on those fools, see what happens to you. But those dudes, what they're rolling with, you know, they're all red, you know. So they're going red, and then they're trying to give us pink. You know, no, I don't, you know. But
well, Tex,
anyway, I should see the pink.
Tex, you said that the TPS report, essentially the affidavit or the form that you pledged to vote for what, and this and that and the other. Well, let's just say that the state party rules dictate that you have to follow that. Well, isn't it true that the RNC, the national party rules, don't recognize that state binding?
Yeah, they don't recognize any legal binding, even if it was done by your state government. It's not recognized, and the federal law does not recognize that binding either. So even if you're up there, you know, in fascist Illinois or New York, where we have a state law that says, no, I'm going to hit you with the state law. Oh, no, that's, oh, God. And what can I do about that one? These guys are all over me, you know. You don't have to worry about it because the national law and the party rules say that it doesn't matter. And, of course, you know, they don't have that problem in New York because they just find the boobs. Like, you know, who's a yes man?
Everybody who's a yes man, raise your hand. Raise your hand. Like, yes.
Yes. You're all delegates now, you knuckleheads. Get in here. Shut up. None of you can even spell or add real good, you know. Two and two makes 22 if you put you pieces of crap.
So basically then the federal law demands that all of these candidates, and actually the national rules also demand that all these delegates are free agents. So if they're free agents, then they can nominate, if their state committee decides to nominate, they can nominate anybody they want, and each delegate can vote for whomever they want based on the duty that they've been given. So if they have this power, then this power needs to be used, okay, because that's what we've given them, and that's what we've told them is their responsibility. So you, as a listener, you as an American, you as a voter, you have a duty to let these delegates know that you intend to see Barack Obama packing his bags and leaving the White House on January 20th. For Barack Obama to pack his bags and leave the White House on January 20th, he has to be voted out of office on November 6th. For Barack Obama to be defeated on November 6th, you need to put a candidate in there who can overcome, money doesn't matter, you need a candidate who can overcome the media onslaught that's going to be the Barack Obama machine. Every channel is going to be for Barack Obama. That means that the predominant way this message is getting out is in the debates. You need a candidate who can out-debate and defeat Barack Obama, and they need to nominate that candidate at the convention 3 weeks from now. Tex, I think you had some zucchini with dinner, but I would like to hear what you have to say.
Well, I agree with you, Rex. Look, I'm glad we're coming to a close on this because this submarine, I'm not built for submarines, dude. I can't do this stuff. You know, after this is over, man, I gotta go hang out at the throne for a bit. Oh my God, I'm dying, dude. I'm dying. Anyway, you just take it home, man. Just take it home, leave me alone.
All right.
You know, maybe I hear it, maybe I don't. Over.
All right. Well,
over
well,
what
Texas,
I gotta do.
Texas is on a special mission to help out at Newt Gingrich, and so are every one of you. And you know, your mission is to contact your delegates to let them know that they need to repeal and replace Romney at the end of this month in Tampa, Florida, with a candidate who can destroy, demolish, utterly tear apart Barack Obama so that we will have a huge victory on November 6th and Barack Obama will be out of a job on January 20th. And on January 21st, we'll be able to say, welcome, President Newt Gingrich. Hail to the chief. This is Tex and Rex. Signing off. We'll see you in Tampa. Thanks for listening, and you can always check us out on the archive. We'll be on Sammy Sanford's show shortly.